Welcome to the Banking with Life podcast. This is our Q&A series where I answer your questions regarding the infinite banking concept, becoming your own banker. Let's get started. Which mutual life insurance companies on record have the highest track record of paying out the highest percentage of dividends? And so here's a commentary, my commentary on dividends. The dividends published, some companies publish their dividend rate, other companies do not. That should be a clue, number one. The dividend, this company pays a higher dividend than that company. We pay greater dividends for a longer period of time than another company. That's such an old game within the life insurance industry where the agent at XYZ wants to beat up the agent at ABC company. Our company pays this dividend. Our company pays this dividend. So, in my opinion, what you would want would be to own a policy with a well-run mutual company that does not play games with their dividends. They don't subsidize their dividends. So the direct answer to your question is companies move up and down in dividends regularly. As interest rates go up in the economy, the interest returns that they enjoy, the life insurance company would enjoy through their investment portfolio, which is very limited, would also rise. Therefore, if they're well run and they're profitable, then the dividend is your share of their financial experience. So if they're well run and profitable, they're going to pay a stable dividend. And that's what you want. Don't fall into the game of this company pays a 6% dividend, this company pays 5.1, this company pays 5.2. Look at the company and look at a company beyond the dividend. That is not the only factor that you would consider in purchasing a policy with a particular company. Just like direct and non-direct. Well, if you're going to practice banking, quote unquote, and you're going to have cash values collateralized, you want a full dividend paid by a non-direct recognition company, not an adjusted dividend that would be paid for a non or that would be paid by a direct recognition company. So non-direct company doesn't consider the outstanding loan or an outstanding loan balance to calculate their dividend. A direct recognition company directly recognizes an outstanding loan and therefore adjusts the dividend. Those things, things like that in totality, don't make a decision on a company based on one factor, especially the dividend. They're a good company, well-run and profitable. They're going to pay a good dividend, and they're going to pay it consistently. Okay. And this question, listening to your podcast the other day, a different listener's question made me think of one. I am high income, and I have been doing thousands per year into a policy for my son, who now lives in Germany as a dual citizen. I'm sure this is a tax question, quote unquote, and I don't give tax advice. My insertion there. Here's a question. What are the tax implications if I turn ownership of the policy over to him and or the cash values are used for his benefit and or if he dies? I guess that's three questions. Yes, sir. Thanks for the background, but it was more than one for sure. Any information that you can provide is appreciated. Okay, so I'm not giving tax advice. You are a U.S. citizen. He is a dual citizen of the U.S. and Germany. And so he's taxed as a U.S. citizen. So are you. The tax implications, very fundamentally, when you give a policy to someone, you have to deal with the gift, the rules around gifting, right? The annual exclusion and then your exemptions on the 70 8 form, I believe. But yes, there could be tax implications when you gift life insurance policies that have cash value. They do have a value. And so when you gift them, then you're subjecting that and anything else to the gift, the rules and the taxation on gifting. So I may not answer your question there, but the death benefit is a death benefit in the U.S. If he's a U.S. citizenship or U.S. citizen, you know, the death benefit is still tax free. You know, under most circumstances, you can always get the circumstance where a death benefit is not tax free, but that generally has to do with business arrangements, right? If you, the parent, owns a policy on your child, and then I'm assuming that, and I know I'm making an assumption here, that you, the parent, is the beneficiary. Is there possible tax consequences on the gift? Yes, it depends on the value of the policy and then how you deal with them. You should deal with them with your tax professional. Can you avoid them? Yes, you should understand how you can avoid or reduce or mitigate some of those taxable consequences. But if he were to graduate, i.e. die, and you are still the beneficiary, it doesn't matter what country he lives in, you're a U.S. citizen, he's a U.S. citizen, the policy's in force, and you're the beneficiary. What he does with the cash value is you know, a private matter. Now, if he or anyone, if we have cash values and we collateralize those cash values and go make an investment or take advantage of an opportunity and make a profit, that activity is going to be taxed at its own character, right? There's no taxation to the policy on that activity as long as the policy is not a modified endowment contract. So I wish I truly, and I understand why some people don't like life insurance and finances. And, you know, there's rarely a cut and dry yes or no answer. You know, the best answer, and one of the best answers, in my opinion, is it depends. You know, it depends on all the circumstances. So in this whole Q&A episode, the whole podcast is meant to be educational with a dash of entertainment, you know, but it's not giving legal advice, investment advice, tax advice. The purpose is to expand your thinking, right? That is the purpose. And for you to discover the idea that you can become your own banker. And then for you to continue to discover what that might mean for you and your people. Okay. And then do with that as you wish, the education. You either like it, you don't like it, no problem. Here's a comment. No, it's a question. Hello there. Great show. Can you tell me the best way to get started with this concept? Have a license and wanting to do part-time without being pushy. Well, I think that, you know, you need to get started on yourself first and then master that and help others. My opinion. I don't believe that, you know, the idea of being in the life insurance business and then the idea of specializing, narrowly focusing your work and your efforts to the infinite banking concept, it is not a side gig. And I'm sure that everybody in the big wide world makes it. There's a lot of people that make it look easy. This is not a side gig, in my opinion. So I know that, you know, you love everyone. You want to help everyone. That does not mean that you have to become a licensed life insurance agent and to do that. Okay. I think sometimes people who want to be licensed to practice the infinite banking concept, you know, they love their friends and their family. And, you know, you want to help them, of course, but you're going to run out of friends and family pretty quick. And then who are you going to help? You know, and I don't know, and maybe you don't know either. And there's a lot in my personal opinion and experience, that you must know and experience to legitimately help people. And I'm not trying to be discouraging, okay? But this is not a side gig. It's not a part-time job, or shouldn't be a part-time job, because ultimately you're not going to do yourself or anyone else the service that otherwise could have been provided. Okay. This is a comment. This is a comment on a short. Because buying term insurance and investing the rest has a higher rate of return and lower fees associated with it. You know, that's such a drive-by comment. It's a regurgitation of the negativity that has existed as long as life insurance has existed. You know, and it's boiling down things to a single point, you know, the cost of term compared to the cost of permanent insurance, and then the rate of return. You know, and that reminds me, I read a quote the other day, and it's kind of set with me. I liked it. And it goes something like this. Fools have no interest in understanding. They only want to air their own opinions. And there are several versions of this. Another version is, a fool takes no pleasure in understanding, but only in expressing his opinion. And this fool is merely regurgitating someone else's opinion, my opinion, all right? And then, as Nelson always said, and I truly believe that most people's understanding of life insurance is based on someone else's misconception. And I have found that to be true in my 33 years of the life insurance business. Okay. Here's a comment. I feel like they never answered the actual question, though. There are benefits of whole life for businesses that aren't just a functioning, or that aren't just a functioning, that aren't just a function of banking. Yes, no question. I completely agree. Maybe we've addressed that elsewhere and not in that particular episode. I don't know. And it's probably didn't answer the question thoroughly. It's quite challenging sometimes to answer questions and to cover topics, ideas, and concepts conversationally off the cuff completely. So, but thanks for your comment and thank you for listening. Now, this is an email. This one came in, and, you know, I really appreciate these. I really do. So this one comes in from Dr. Doug. He says, Dear Mr. Nethery, I'm a client of yours. You and I spoke over the phone several months ago, leading to my policy's start. It has been in effect for over 15 months. I simply wanted to convey a few thoughts on my experience with the infinite banking concept. My original entry into becoming your own banker was to protect capital in an inflationary financial environment with other troubles, such as what has become known as quote unquote unbanking. These goals are being satisfied by my policy, so I am quite pleased. The entry into IBC was not without trepidation. Just so you will know, I am 63 years of age, and my early education occurred in the quote-unquote public schools. Hence, I completed 12 years of public education without so much as a single lesson on personal finance. I have always been thrifty, but it was only after a four-year college degree and 40 years that I began to educate myself on finance, stocks, treasury bills, commodities, etc. Last but not least was IBC. Venturing into IBC required a change in thinking. Throughout most of my life, I had foolishly regarded money as immutable. This is not maybe the best word, but it is the only one that comes to mind quickly. It is more correct to regard money as a form of debt built on a plastic foundation. It took a while, but I have come to think in terms of capital, quote unquote, and the quote unquote control of capital. With my policy, I now seem to have substantial control of over that capital. That is an empowering feeling. I recently took out a policy loan largely to learn to manage the loan process. The insurance company's response was quick enough. It is actually quite easy for me to handle my repayments over the website. The only part of the process that was confusing was their paperwork on the scheduling of repayments. As it turns out, this paperwork was not needed, so I simply put it aside. I manage my monthly payments as a part of my regular monthly expenses. So in summary, I am pleased with my specific policy and with IBC in general, and I just thought I would send you a little feedback. Sincerely, Dr. Doug. Thank you, sir. And I have a few comments. I appreciate the positive comments and the feedback. I agree that the idea of controlling the banking function doesn't exist anywhere in conventional financial planning or conventional financial education, much less the public school system. So, and I appreciate, obviously, you're still a learner after all of those years, and your thinking was challenged, and you pushed through the challenge. I mean, I love that. Very admirable. And then, of course, I would say that's how outdated these life insurance companies are, and I'm not being negative or disparaging. They're afraid with a loan that you're not going to repay the loan and the policy will ultimately lapse. That has been historically true with loans against life insurance policies. And the mere fact that they sent you the paperwork that says, hey, how do you want to restructure your loan? You know, I love that. When in fact, if they have a portal, a website, you can go in and manage all of that yourself. Woo, what a concept. Now you're therefore not dependent on the life insurance company, the financial guru, the life insurance agent. It's you. Self-reliance. I love that. Thanks again. I have been doing IBC for a bit and am well on my way to buy all of my debt. Your podcast and YouTube channel have really helped me along the way, so thank you. You're welcome. I am thrilled with this system and way of thinking. One question keeps nagging me, though, possibly based on that normal, quote unquote, way of thinking. Nelson Nash mentions in his book, Controlling All Financing, in parentheses, and mortgage was included. So his question, should I buy back my mortgage debt? Question mark. My mortgage debt is at an extremely low APR. In other words, does controlling that money in my banking system outweigh giving up the very low APR mortgage? Are there any mathematical comparisons of the two options? Yes, there are mathematical comparisons, and I'm sure there's a lot of agents out there that would love to beat you to death with those calculations, and I'm not one. I would encourage you, however, if you have a policy, and you do, you're well on your way and you're well-versed, just look at the action of your policy over time, right? And that action over time compared to the action of paying down a mortgage sooner than a 30-year time period, right? And so, I mean, you can spend a ton of time proving to yourself, and you should prove to yourself whether this makes sense for you or not. And so let me, I'll therefore then give my response in an email. And I said to Rusty, this is Rusty, thank you for listening and the kind words. I'm glad that you're getting it done, sir. Nelson said it would take the average bear 14 years to control the banking function as it relates to them. Granted, I do not know your financial details. However, I would not stress over paying your mortgage off with policy loans. Having the ability to pay one's mortgage can be a greater position than actually paying it off. I would not pay off the low interest rate just for the interest rate. I would relish in the fact that I have the ability to do so if I choose to. The banker, quote unquote, can do whatever they want to do. And then I encouraged him to determine the value of his own capital in terms of a percentage rate, i.e., if the value of your capital is 10% and your mortgage rate is at 2%, make the difference in those two cash flows become a premium. There are so many things that you could do. But look, you have a 30-year mortgage. You know, should I keep the mortgage? Yeah, I get to deduct interest, maybe, maybe not. Should I pay that off? It depends. It depends on your personal financial situation. And I'm just saying having the ability to pay the mortgage off may be a better position than actually doing it. You can get mad and do it at any time, right? If you have the capital, right? Well, then how much capital is remaining to take advantage of other opportunities or whatever, it, you know, in downturns in the economy or your financial situation? So it really depends on what you do. I have done both. You know, I've paid mortgages off and then I've kept mortgages and, you know, had many wonderful conversations with Nelson Nash about that as well while he was here. Okay, but a great question and thank you for the positive comments. Okay, now this one, you know, some of them will just touch your heart every now and then. And this is rather recent. We're in July 2024 right now. I don't know when this will get released, but this was an email from actually yesterday. Okay. And it says, good morning. I had a meeting with James yesterday and I wanted to say thank you for settling this up for me. We did work through some thinking issues and just some genuine questions that he had. And he's an existing client. Okay. This is from Ken. Also, please tell James, thank you for being so generous with his time. I took more time than I expected. I so appreciated that very much. You're welcome. Lastly, James asked in the conversation how I'd heard about Banking with Life, but we didn't have time to go into that answer, so I'll try to explain it as quickly as I can. A friend of a friend is a life insurance agent, and the IBC, infinite banking concept strategy, was brought to my attention by that agent. So I had multiple hour long meetings with him. But from my perspective, he was either holding some information back or didn't know the information. I had to pull it from him by doing my own research and asking more questions, which in a way was beneficial for me because I had to teach myself. Then he seemed to push me toward a particular company very hard and came off like he was trying to quote unquote close the deal. Also, the idea of HELOCs, that strategy came up as a way to pay higher premiums. And it was just too complicated in my mind. Needless to say, I was put off and I had suspicions and I started looking elsewhere. I came across James before on YouTube, but because this was new to me, I didn't connect with what James was talking about. So I moved on to other YouTube channels that I'm sure James is familiar with. They seemed to have good intentions, but basically all had the same strategy of HELOCs to pay premiums, 90-10 policy designs. And I just got tired of all of the numbers that they showed. Then I circled back to James's YouTube channel, and after about 8 months of watching, listening, and having meetings with those other folks on YouTube, I think getting educated was the key to seeing and understanding what Nelson, James, and Ryan Griggs, were talking about versus just the numbers. After watching his channel for a little while, I could tell James was the real deal. Thank you. I count on that. You know, what you see is what you get. And because of his association with Nelson and being listed on the practitioner's finder as the first agent certified in infinite banking concepts, convinced me to go with James. So what he's speaking of is a Nelson Nash Institute agent finder, practitioner finder. You can go on there and whatever state agents are listed in, their names will come up. And if you look at my profile on there, what he's referring to, I was the first agent to become authorized at the Nelson Nash Institute. My agent or my code there is 001. And that happened to be in 2012. So that's what he's talking about. Okay, then he goes on. Not only was James important on my decision to move forward, but his entire team and family at Banking with Life, everyone is very professional, very passionate, patient, and willing to help with no ulterior motives. You can't pay for this. So it is the entire package, not just James, even though James had a huge role in my decision. In the end, I'm happy with all of the bad agents, whether intentionally bad or not. They led me to Banking with Life. Everyone, keep up the good work. Each of you have a big impact on us, clients, and the general public. And I feel like I am part of some type of family and that you have my back. Well, Ken, that was very lovely, and thank you for sharing that. Thank you for listening. If you have a question that you would like answered, email me at james@bankingwithlife.com. Thank you for listening. Have a great day, and we'll see you next time.